Hey, we're back. It's downtown 432. Here on a Monday afternoon, Rich Kimball with you. And, well, it is like magic anytime we get to welcome in Chad Finn of the Boston Globe. Hello there, Mr. Finn.
How are you, Rich?
I'm just great. It's Monday. My driveway is pretty much clear of snow. Did you get it bad down in the southern part of the state?
Yeah, we got about 15 inches, I think, based on the scientific measurements off the roof of the car. So, yeah, the first time I went out to snowblow the driveway, I could only see about maybe a foot in front of me just blowing back in my face. Just a complete waste of an hour of my life.
Well, we had the weird drifting, so there were spots where it was about 3 inches and then other places where it was around 20 inches.
Yeah, ours was much more evenly distributed down here. It was terrible everywhere.
Oh, dear. Well, my goodness, what a big weekend in sports. Let's start with the Tom Brady story. I don't know what to make of it other than Adam Schefter is usually pretty reliable. Is this just a case of timing?
Yeah, it is. If you read our story, I mean, we've kind of circled around it a little bit, but we did get confirmation that this is going to happen, and that he's going to retire from somebody who is very close to him and would know and would be involved with the process. But it seems like Tom just wasn't expecting it out at this point, didn't want it out at this point for a couple of reasons, didn't want to take the shine away from the championship games over the weekend. He's got a financial element to this where I think February 4th he gets a certain amount of money for still being on the books, and we know he's got all these production and off the field interests that he probably wants to tie to this somehow. I've thought all along that the last episode of The Man in the Arena was where he was going to do this. It was delayed. The final episode was delayed, surprisingly, to a lot of people who had to renew their ESPN Plus subscriptions to be able to get the last episode when it comes out. And I suspected that was might have been where he was going to announce it. But, you know, we've all seen how it goes with him when he's got a huge decision to make. I mean, looking back on when he left the Patriots, it should have been clear to us he was leaving. He put his house on the market during the season. He was very frustrated even when they were 8-0, and he kind of dropped clues all along the way, and he's been doing that as well this year about the retirement. So I don't think this is any surprise. The only surprise is it came to him that it came out the way that it did.
What do you think is the next step for him?
He's going to sell $350 sweatshirts for a while and then probably come back and play for the Niners. Well, Seth Wickersham, who's really obviously been plugged into Brady and the Patriots for a long time for ESPN, suggested that Brady really found some off-the-field stuff enjoyable. His clothing business, Brady Brand. Obviously, the TB12 stuff is something that's been a passion for his for a few years now. And I think more than ever, it seems like he's really comfortable with the idea of moving on to other things and not having his life centered around football. Of course, family is a big part of this. His son, his oldest son, is getting ready to go into high school. He talked about wanting to be there for them and not missing things. And the commitment to football makes that impossible sometimes. So I think he's just looking forward to being with his family and really attacking some of these business interests that have become important to him over the last couple of years.
People have talked about him moving into broadcasting. I could see him doing that and being very good, but my guess is that at least for the time being, that might be a little too much of a time commitment for him.
Yeah, I can't see it. Deitch had me do a podcast, Richard Deitch of The Athletic, maybe a month or two ago about this. And I think I disappointed him by saying there's no chance it's going to happen. But I just can't see it. He's never given any indication that this is something that he wants to do. He's never been somebody who's been particularly candid in the way that Peyton Manning is. And Is it at ease on camera the way Manning is? And again, I think the other business interests and off the field interests would take priority over being on TV. I don't think he'd be bad at it. I don't think he'd be like what Joe Montana was in his 1 year in the NBC studio, where he just kind of stared blankly into the camera like Cindy Brady for a while. I don't think it's something that he's really all that interested in either.
We're talking with Chad Finn here on Downtown. On that podcast with Richard Deitch, Troy Aikman was also on as well, and nothing official yet, but it sounds like he may be making a move from Fox to this brand new, was it an Amazon venture?
Yeah, he and Al Michaels are given the same answer to that. When you ask them, I talked to Al before the last round of the playoffs, just about various things, and I asked him about that because it's been rumored all year that he was going to be the voice of the Thursday night Amazon broadcast. He said the same thing then that Aikman said with Richard on the podcast, which is, I'll have a decision very soon after the season ends and an announcement very soon. So whatever the decision is with the both of these guys, Aikman on Fox and Al with NBC, it seems pretty clear right now that that choice has already been made and they know what their future is going to be. They're just waiting to announce it. Now, I'll tell you, Rich, if it ends up Michaels and Aikman on Thursday night, to me that's the best broadcast you could possibly have. I think Aikman is the best color analyst, color analyst of high prominence on NFL broadcasts right now. And Al's always been my number one play-by-play guy. They're still, even at 77 years old, he's on top of his game and lends that big game element to every broadcast that he does. So I think that would be a tremendous broadcast, even if that's what Amazon ends up with.
I can't wait to see what happens there. Now, the Josh McDaniel story was an interesting one. He was in, he was out. Well, now he's definitely in as the Raiders coach. Will he be any more successful this time around?
It's going to be interesting. I am awaiting the rebuttals from all the people who said he would never get another sniff of a head coaching job after he bailed out on the Colts, because I thought that angle was absurd at the time. He kind of needed things to happen the way they did, which is having some success with someone other than Tom Brady. And, you know, they wrung 7 wins out of Cam Newton, which was not a successful season, but a heck of a coaching job. And then Mac Jones was the best rookie quarterback in the NFL last season as the 5th one selected in the first round. So that reflected really well on Josh as well, really shaping the offense these last 2 years around quarterbacks with completely different skill sets. So he's proven that his success is not entirely tied to being the offensive coordinator for Tom Brady for most of his careers. I think he was probably a little bit immature for the head coaching job when he had at Denver before. There's a book by Nate Jackson, who is a former tight end for the Broncos and a really good writer, who really killed McDaniels for the way he carried himself out there. But he did have success early before it all fell apart. And I suspect this is going to be a case of just a guy learning his lesson from his first go-around, not entirely different from what Bill Belichick learned from Cleveland before he became the Patriots head coach.
Is Bill Bryan likely to be the new guy in that spot as OC?
I don't know. We've got no indication at all, but it certainly seems to be a popular choice. He's a pretty good coach in Houston. They made the playoffs, 4 times I think they won the division while he was there. The real issue was he was a terrible – he shouldn't have had personnel decision. He really made some head-scratching calls there, trading DeAndre Hopkins for David Johnson and things like that. But he's a good coach, and we've seen him as an offensive coordinator here, you know, being here with Randy Moss and Welker and those guys. And seems like he'd be somebody who would really be a good fit with Mac Jones at this point in his career, help him take the next step. It kind of annoys me that there's a sense with Mac that people think he's a finished product right now. I know his ceiling isn't as high as some other quarterbacks because his arm strength just isn't, laser rocket arm level. But he will and can get better. And Bill O'Brien seems like somebody who would really be able to help him progress as an NFL quarterback from his excellent rookie season.
Let's talk a little baseball. David Ortiz, the only guy elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame. That's one of those where you weren't sure when you first knew he would be on the ballot, but he seemed to gain momentum over the course of the last year or so. And boy, for any New England sports fan, it's an interesting time to take stock of your life with Tom Brady retiring and Ortiz going into the Hall of Fame.
I swear, 3 minutes ago, I just finished writing that column and trying to pinpoint when the you know, with Ortiz and Brady, and they're kind of the number one, number two avatars of that 20-year run of success, and trying to pinpoint when we really had it best, like when was the best time of through all those seasons to really be a Boston sports fan. And I kind of settled on October 2007, which is where, you know, Sox won their second World Series, wiped out the Rockies, Patriots were rampaging through the NFL. I think they finished that month 8-0, and the Celtics with Garnett, Allen, Pierce, United were just beginning a season where they, you know, went 29-3 out of the gate and won, ended up winning the championship. That feels like the peak to me, even though that Patriots team didn't win the Super Bowl. Still one of the most successful dominating teams in NFL history. But, it's really easy to get nostalgic right now because Ortiz and Brady, you know, just two guys who brought so much joy to this region. They're hitting these milestones where Brady, we're not going to see him play anymore, and Ortiz is officially a baseball immortal now.
And I guess I balked at this when people first said it, and I still don't think he's the greatest player in Red Sox history, but I guess it would be hard to argue that he's not the most important.
Shaughnessy's going to knock on the door to your studio here any second for saying that. We've been arguing about that passive-aggressively in print for about 2 weeks. My argument has always been that Ortiz is the most important player in Red Sox history because he got the hits no one else did. He got the hits Ted Williams couldn't get in 46, Yaz in 67. Yaz is great in the World Series, and obviously down the stretch in 67, he's as incredible as anybody has ever been. But I think he also made the last out in 67, 75, and 78.
Right.
He couldn't get those hits that would help you overcome the Yankees and then put up that World Series banner that was long awaited since 1918, and Ortiz did it over and over again. Red Sox history changed when they signed him and made him a member of the Red Sox before the 2003 season. So Ted Williams is the greatest player Red Sox, greatest hitter ever to walk the earth, but Ted Williams changed, or David Ortiz changed Red Sox history in a way that we never were sure would ever happen.
Did you see that when the announcement was made, the Minnesota Twins posted a congratulations to Ortiz with a picture of him in a Twins uniform? I thought that was brilliant.
Oh, just people are going to be so mad when he goes into the Hall of Fame with a Twins hat. It's a big Twins Hall of Fame weekend, actually. Ortiz, they can claim, I guess, and Tony Oliva's finally in, and Jim Cott, the best years of his career were probably in Minnesota. So Red Sox fans are going to overrun Cooperstown this summer, but they may have some competition from Minnesota people as well.
I'm holding out till they put in Zoilo Versailles.
MVP in 65.
That's right. Right. That's right.
Yeah, we start putting in one-year MVPs. He's going to have a case for sure. Good hitting shortstop for at least one season.
I know we talked about you with baseball cards. I don't know if you saw the news story that they're, I believe the new cards that are coming out are going to mimic, I think it was with the 68 cards with that wood frame border.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. Ryan Fagan, always posts those cards from the Sporting News writer on Twitter. It's 87. It's the 35th anniversary, I think, of the wood-paneled 87 set, which copied a couple of designs from the 60s. But that one is apparently very beloved by collectors, and it was a huge season for rookies, you know, Mark McGwire and Will Clark and guys like Barry Bonds had his first card in that set, guys like that. So I think collectors of a certain age have probably been looking looking forward to this one for a little while, digging into the archives.
That 87 set, I think, had an overabundance of Rick Roden cards. I seem to remember getting more than I wanted of those.
You can probably still get packs of those at your neighborhood CVS or Puff and Stop or whatever it happens to be. They were. That was the era where you could. I remember being at UMaine a year or two later, and you go to like Doug's shops and just save or Stop and Shop, whatever it was, and in Orono, and there would be like boxes upon boxes of baseball cards available. It was the junk wax heyday, as they call it.
Exactly. Chad Finn of the Boston Globe. Chad, appreciate it as always. Have yourself a wonderful evening. I'll cheer for the girls tonight. Hope your daughter gets a win, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Yeah, 13-0. It's been a good season so far, but a tough one tonight down in York.
All right, good luck with that. We'll catch you before too long.
All right, see you, Rich.
Thanks, Chad. Chad Finn of the Boston Globe here on Downtown.